Could our smartphones be turning us into smarter shoppers? From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is Tuesday, November 27th. We'll talk about trying to outsmart Black Friday. We'll talk about why we overworked Americans aren't using all of our vacation time. What? And we'll wish a happy birthday to the most lovable metal and plastic disc to ever suck Cheerios off of our floors, the CEO of the iRobot company, maker of the Roomba. He's coming up on the podcast in a little bit.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
So with Cyber Monday behind us now, today two movements are competing for your allegiance, if you didn't know. Depending on whom you ask, today is either Giving Tuesday, when you're supposed to donate to charity, or it is Mobile Tuesday, when you're supposed to buy stuff using your smartphone. For us, of course, Tuesday is the day we often talk to Julie Neiman. She's an analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. Hey, Julie.
Morning, Jeff.
So a person could look at the numbers for holiday shopping so far and debate whether consumers are holding back because of the economy, maybe. You would argue, I gather, they're holding back a little because they're getting very smart about this Black Friday, Cyber Monday business.
Well, a couple of good things. Average spending was up about 6% per shopper. So the consumer isn't stewing over jobs and taxes and the economy like the press says. What they want are deals, and they're getting very smart about it. Total sales over the last 4 days were up 13%, slower than last year, but never fear. We've got a longer shopping season going on this year. And they were out en masse, but they had their iPhones out and their iPads and every single smartphone. The bricks and mortar retailers this year just finally figured out how to fight these guys online. Smartphones are made for really smart shoppers. They browse, select, click, and ship online even while they're strolling through the stores. But the bricks and mortar stores are saying, we've got to be price competitive now. We've got to have the inventory in. And they're offering events. This is becoming entertainment. Shopping is fun. JCPenney put a toboggan run in Dallas, a blimp dropping gifts in Tennessee. They've got an ice rink going on in New Orleans. So it's trying to get the shopper back as entertainment.
Right. And Julie, how are shoppers reading these Black Friday deals? Is everybody rushing in for those, you know, cheap TVs you can get right after Thanksgiving?
Well, Black Friday has really turned out to be a non-event. They even tried Thanksgiving Thursday coming in. The shopper knows there are only three of those 60-inch wall-to-wall TVs priced at $1.380 at Walmart. It's not worth camping out when you know there are going to be more one-day and two-day deals. And that's what the retailers are going to be doing, offering a lot of pepper offers of one- and two-day deals. Get in here right now, so keep the shopper coming back in and off online.
Yeah, and things may get cheaper yet, of course. Julie Neiman, thanks very much. An analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis.
You bet.
And let's do the numbers. Well, markets are up a bit at the moment, but all morning we've been watching them go back and forth. Currently, the Dow is sitting around 12,971 and is more or less flat. The S&P is up about 0.2%, and the NASDAQ also up about 0.2%. But it's been an up-and-down morning, as I said. U.S. durable goods orders rose unexpectedly. The rise in spending on big-ticket items is a positive window on business activity. But within the numbers, there remain signs that some businesses are holding back until they see a solution for the fiscal cliff. U.S. home prices rose in September for the 8th straight month, according to this morning's Case-Shiller Index. And U.S. consumer confidence has hit its highest level in 5 years. Here's one more important number for you. 9 days. That's how much vacation time most Americans will leave on the table this year, according to a study by the travel site Hotwire. So why aren't we taking our rightfully earned time off? Here's Marketplace's David Weinberg.
It's partly out of fear. Americans are afraid their boss will think they're lazy or that their job could get eliminated while they're away. John DeGraff made a documentary about overworked Americans called Running Out of Time. He found there's a high cost to not taking vacation.
Women who don't regularly take vacations are anywhere from 2 to 8 times more likely to suffer from depression, 50% higher chance of heart disease.
For men, the risk of death from a heart attack goes up a third. But even when Americans get paid vacation time, most of them don't take it.
We're just like cell phones and iPods. We've got to be recharged on a regular basis.
Joe Robinson is a consultant with Optimal Performance Strategies. He says all this work isn't necessarily making us more productive, and it comes with a huge price tag.
$344 billion a year.
That's the amount American businesses spend on stress-related healthcare costs, according to a study by Middle Tennessee State University. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
The food giant ConAgra is getting a little more giant. It plans to buy private label food producer Ralcor for almost $5 billion. And maybe you haven't heard of Ralcor, but odds are pretty good it's in your pantry. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark tells us why this deal matters.
You may not know much about ConAgra, but you may have eaten it for breakfast or lunch or dessert. The many brands they own include Egg Beaters, Orville Redenbacher, Ready Whip, and this old favorite.
Ask for Chef Boyardee's spaghetti dinner, only about 15 cents a serving.
Now that ConAgra is buying Ralcor, you can add to that list Krusty's frozen pancakes, Rye Krisp bread, and lots of generic brands sold under private supermarket labels. And that's what made Ralcor alluring, says Kate Warren, investment strategist for Edward Jones.
In this environment where so many families are really finding the budget tight, moving down to the grocery store label brand is going to be something that we see more families do, and ConAgra is positioning itself very well in that marketplace.
Altogether, ConAgra's acquisition of Ralcor would create one of the largest packaged food companies in North America. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
Before the year comes to an end here, let's wish a happy 10th birthday to the Roomba. Since 2002, the iRobot company has sold more than 6 million of the little discs that vacuum all by themselves. But iRobot has always had a vision beyond removing household grime, and its CEO, Colin Angle, has been outspoken trying to push his industry to let go of old conventions and let robots take a bigger role in our lives. Colin, good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you. Good to be here.
iRobot has prospered partly because of our love affair with robots. And yet you say, as I understand it, that we need to quit lusting after C-3PO and Rosie from the Jetsons. Basically, pop culture is getting in the way of progress. Tell me more about what you mean there.
Well, the robots have a huge amount to offer us today without having to wait for technology that will perhaps one day be practical. But trying to create legged walking robots, it's too expensive and creates machines that are too unreliable to find their way into the mainstream today. If you can narrow your focus and say, well, okay, I can't have Rosie from the Jetsons today, but can I have my floors vacuumed? Can I have my pools cleaned, my floors scrubbed? These types of things can be accomplished today at prices that we can afford.
iRobot's floor cleaning and gutter cleaning and other domestic tasks, that's kind of the consumer-facing front of the company. Mm-hmm. But you're also very active in military applications and especially lately, healthcare. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing in that sphere.
There's an industry where you have a small number of very, very knowledgeable people, doctors, and a robot can be used to allow such a doctor to project himself into the robot, like an avatar, interact with the patient, and help render a diagnosis that is far more sophisticated and experience-based than a local doctor might be able to perform.
So I asked my followers on Facebook the other day if they had any questions for you. Here's one that I'm going to put to you. How many U.S. jobs do you think are going to be in robotics in the future, and what kind of training would you recommend for young people in order to take advantage of those jobs?
Well, I think that the robot industry is going to be a major industry in the U.S. in coming years. There are technical degrees in robotics, which will become increasingly important, but there's also going to be a demand for good businessmen, good salespeople, good service and technical support people, and so that the careers enabled by the robot industry are not just technical careers, but typical business degrees for consumer electronics, for example, augmented by some special purpose technical education requirements.
Colin Angle, CEO of iRobot. This has been fun. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
After waiting and waiting and waiting for what seems like weeks, the creditors of Greece finally have a deal to release the next tranche, as they say, of bailout funds for that country. Today, we have a new report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is calling on its members around the world, the rich countries of the world, basically, to shape up or risk a global economic calamity. The OECD uses its new report today to call out countries on every continent, warning them to restore confidence in their economies. The OECD's chief economist is Pier Carlo Padoan, and he's with me now. Good to talk with you.
Nice talking to you.
How would you say this report is different in tone or in substance from warnings that the OECD has given in the past?
Well, certainly our numbers look worse than they used to be in 6 months ago when we released our previous economic outlook. The global economy is in worse shape, especially in the euro area, but also in some places like the emerging economies and to some extent in the U.S. And there are risks, meaning that things could go worse, for instance, in the euro area if there are major financial accidents, but could go even much better if policy action is decisive in places like the U.S. and in Europe.
As I glance over the details, it seems like you're calling for countries to work to resolve their fiscal problems at the government level. You're also calling for them to be very careful of not harming growth. In practice, those two goals can tend to undercut each other.
Well, not really. What we're saying in the U.S. is that they have to deal with the fiscal cliff, because if they don't, they will push the economy into a recession. But they also have to put that into a medium-term perspective. So they have to be more expansionary in the immediate short term, but also more careful and prudent in the medium term.
The OECD isn't just some random think tank. I mean, you represent all of the countries that you're talking to. Do you think they will listen to you?
Well, we hope that countries listen to us. This is our business. We produce policy advice, and if it's useful, we hope that countries use it.
Pier Carlo Padoan is chief economist at the OECD. Great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
A few years ago, U.S. car makers faced a financial crisis. Of course, two were bailed out by the government, and all three underwent major restructuring. Today, car makers across the Atlantic face their own crisis. And this week, we've got a series of stories for you on the future of European automakers. Christopher Wirth begins the road rally today in Turin, Italy, home of the Fiat.
Ciao.
Step inside to Bar Tizzoli. It's more a cafe, really. There's a radio on in the background, a row of arcade games, and very few customers. The cafe sits just outside Fiat's sprawling factory in Turin. Tito Gallo has worked at the factory for 23 years. He says workers used to meet at the cafe every day in between shifts, but lately Fiat has cut their hours to just a few days a month.
23
years ago, there were a lot of people here, and now there's no one. I've watched this factory die.
In the U.S., Fiat is known as the company that saved Chrysler. Today, Chrysler may be the only thing that's keeping Fiat afloat. European car makers are up against what Fiat and Chrysler CEO Sergio Marchionne calls Carmageddon. Europeans are in no mood to buy cars because of the debt crisis. In Italy and Spain, sales are down as much as 35%.
So you have an industry that is in a very serious situation.
Aldo Enrietti is with the University of Turin. He says Europe also has too many auto factories and too many auto workers. European plants run at just 70% their potential capacity. That's far below the point at which companies make money. David Bailey of Coventry University says many car factories in Europe need to close.
What we need to see happen really is a restructuring of the automobile industry in Europe in a similar way to what happened in the United States.
In fact, he says there's a certain amount of envy in Europe. American car makers have emerged from bankruptcy and quickly landed on their feet. Stefano Aversa is with Axis Partners, a consultancy to the auto industry. He says an American-style approach in Europe would be ideal, but Europe is made of 27 different countries, and none of them want their auto factories to close.
I think the solution will be found company by company and country by country.
And he says Europe has little appetite for more bailouts. In Turin, Italy, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Wrapping up here, some folks in Rhode Island are questioning whether police have gone too far this time. Cops following up on a smashed mailbox complaint caught five teenagers not far away making a getaway. So the boys were taken from their car, ordered to the ground, and asked to do push-ups. 12, actually, which, you know, if you don't do push-ups a lot, that can seem like plenty of push-ups. And then they sent the boys on their way. So there's quite a kerfluffle over it, evidently, in Rhode Island. And true, It is not in the police manual, but it probably beats a trip to jail if you're one of those boys. And finally, as we get near the end of 2012 here, some folks are less worried about the fiscal cliff than kind of the cliff to end all cliffs, you might say. The Mayan calendar, as you may have heard, might or might not, it's not entirely clear, predict an end to life as we know it when we get to the end of 2012. One fella in China isn't taking any chances. Liu Zhenghai, in the landlocked state of Urumqi, has built himself an ark. He has invested all of his money in the 70-foot boat. It doesn't appear from the thing like he intends to load it up with animals, mostly just his family, I imagine. If, in fact, the world does not come to an end in a giant flood, he plans to use the thing to offer sightseeing tours on a nearby river. So he's covered either way. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update today. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.